It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price. Peace in the Mideast. Maybe.
A ceasefire is still holding.
That is our top story this Friday. 11 days of violence that's claimed hundreds of lives has come to an end, at least for now anyway. A ceasefire holding between Israeli forces and Palestinians from Hamas to, quote, keep its finger on the trigger. Fox News reporter Trey Yinks.
In southern Israel, life is getting back to normal. This after 11 straight days of fighting between Hamas and the Israeli military. For now, the rocket fire and airstrikes have both stopped.
Last night, President Biden appeared to take credit for the ceasefire, despite reports that Egypt was the one that brokered the deal.
Over the last 11 days, I've spoken to the Prime Minister six times. And I want to also thank the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, our National Security Advisor, and everyone on our team for their incredible efforts to bring this about, this outcome.
Virginia Congressman Rob Whitman says the president is exaggerating his involvement in brokering the ceasefire.
I think they had very little to do with this peace agreement. Egypt was actually the main broker behind the lines, and I believe that they did very little in a productive way to support Israel. They did very little in a productive way to make this conflict end, at least temporarily.
The administration will join Egypt in sending representatives to the region to make sure both sides keep the peace in the Middle East. Former Congressman Trey Gowdy says President Biden needs to take this pause in the fighting and get tough on Hamas.
What's even better than a ceasefire is not to need a ceasefire. So tell them to stop firing rockets into Israel, and then we won't need the ceasefire.
The peace deal provides humanitarian aid to the Palestinian people and money for Israel to beef up its defense forces. Tensions in the Middle East spilled over to the streets of New York City last night, where pro-Israeli and pro-Palestinian protesters clashed in Times Square.
I love that there's peace. You know, I'm hoping for peace. I hope that it's long sustained. We'll see how it goes. Really, really hope that the peace stays.
We don't want a ceasefire. We want Palestine to be free.
Solid. 26 people arrested last night in Times Square after that ceasefire was announced in the Middle East. An NYPD hate crimes unit, meantime, investigating a gang assault against a Jewish man, and commercial explosives were also set off in a predominantly Jewish neighborhood, causing one person to be injured. Airports across the country slowly returning to normal today after an outage overnight in the system that checks passengers in. It caused long lines and confusion. This woman was trying to catch a flight at Logan International in Boston.
I've never seen it like this before. The lines are quite long. Just waiting to get on my flight. It's changed three times since I've been in line.
Systems are running again today, but officials say there could be delays. Four planes carrying migrant kids arrived at the Wilson Air Center in Tennessee last night, where four buses then sent those kids to cities all throughout the volunteer state. Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn says this administration is running out of options and running out of room at the southern border.
They're putting them on planes and flying them to states without any knowledge of the governors. I've just talked to our governor, and the governors don't know it. The local officials don't know it.
Don McLaughlin, the mayor of Uvalde, Texas, says the situation at the southern border totally out of control.
In the last 6 months, it's gotten just, it's like I've described before, it's become the wild, wild west. I mean, in our community, we were averaging 13 to 15 chases a week. Almost every one of these cars that come in now, they're armed. There's guns in these cars.
Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich says it's inexcusable that the president and the vice president have yet to visit the southern border.
Let them go, Joe, and the vice president, to come to states like Arizona or Texas and actually see what's going on the ground. Because the reality is that everyone knows what the root cause is. The Biden administration has decriminalized and incentivized and now is trying to monetize people crossing the border illegally.
Brnovich says they're expecting 2 million illegal border crossings this year alone.
It's like the entire state of Nebraska coming over. It's overwhelming us on so many levels. And as a former gang prosecutor, I will tell you that the cartels are making money off everything that's going on, and they are increasing the amount of drugs like fentanyl fentanyl and cocaine and heroin that are coming into our neighborhood. And that's not going to stay in Arizona and Texas. That is coming to Des Moines. It's coming to Chicago. It's coming to Virginia and New York.
Meantime, the United Nations now urging the Biden administration to end public health restrictions that allowed migrant children to be removed quickly because of COVID-19 health risks. Britain's Prince William and his brother Harry are blasting the BBC for an interview of their mother, the late Princess Diana, gave back in 1995. An investigation discovered several unethical practices led up to that interview. Prince William says the interview added to his mother's feelings of paranoia.
The deceitful way the interview was obtained substantially influenced what my mother said. The interview was a major contribution to making my parents' relationship worse.
Journalist Martin Bashir apologized for using fake bank records to make it look like people were being paid to keep tabs on Diana. It is the highest honor in the military, the Medal of Honor, and today President Biden will bestow it on a 94-year-old Korean War vet, retired Army Colonel Ralph Puckett Jr., being honored for going above and beyond the call of duty. From Florida, a story of a crime that was foiled by slime. An 11-year-old girl helped cops there capture her would-be kidnapper this week by marking her attacker with blue slime that she'd been playing with. Police say that trick gave them the evidence they needed to make an arrest.
The suspect, when we caught him, had blue slime all over his own arm.
Sheriff Chip Simmons.
I'm not so sure if she actually comprehends exactly what could have happened. And she fought like a trooper.
Smart kid, the young girl was attacked while waiting for her school bus. She says she learned the blue slime trick from watching Law and Order SVU. Her mom says the assailant was caught, quote, blue-handed. Still to come this Friday, face-masking two-year-olds in New York, remembering Fred Rogers in Pennsylvania, and back in business at Darien Lake.
Good afternoon. The heat is on today. We'll talk about that and the weekend forecast coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Kevin Williams, checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Friday, May 21st, another face-mask controversy in New York. Just as a lot of us are trying to take those coverings off, the state telling kids in daycare to put them back on.
I can't keep my daughter's pants on. I can't keep my son's shoes on. I couldn't imagine trying to wrestle them to keep a mask on their face all day. And I don't want to do that to anybody else's children either.
Jason Durkin from Orchard Park has three kids in daycare, and he runs a daycare in Kenmore. Mary Jazztrab is a registered nurse at a summer camp in nearby Tonawanda.
Just when people are starting to get back to work and back to their normal lives, now you're going to have parents have to make a decision. Do I want my child to wear a mask all day long in the hot summer months?
The state says kids as young as two must wear face masks at daycare, even when they're outside. Kelly Kronbeck runs several daycare centers near Buffalo.
It's just not fair. It's not even, you know, operationally possible. Like, it's I don't know how we're supposed to do it.
Kronbeck says the science and the math simply don't justify keeping kids masked at daycare.
450 to 500 kids per day for the last year, unmasked within 6 feet of each other. And we've had three cases.
Summer camps are also subject to these strict mask rules in New York. In addition to the face masks, the New York State Health Department is demanding that daycares and camps provide detailed information on vaccinations for both the staff and the children who attend summer camp. The New York Times says Governor Cuomo under investigation for allegedly giving his family priority testing for COVID back when the pandemic began.
There's a pattern of narcissism here. Lower people are not human beings. They're not treated the same.
Dr. Mark Siegel, a professor of medicine at NYU, says he cannot believe that with all the scandals surrounding this governor, he's still in office.
This is our governor accused of sexual harassment, privileged activities, testing his family only in the middle of a pandemic, readmitting people to nursing home, causing countless deaths directly, and still governor? What state are we living in?
At a COVID press briefing Thursday, the governor attacked a reporter who questioned his controversial book deal, in which he made $5 million during the middle of the pandemic. A bombshell report says CNN anchorman Chris Cuomo took part in top-level strategy sessions with his brother, Andrew Cuomo, urging him not to resign. Correspondent Brian Shook has more.
The Washington Post reports Chris Cuomo advised his brother how to respond to sexual harassment claims against him and urged him to take a defiant stance. The calls reportedly also involved the governor's aides and his communications team. CNN said it was inappropriate to engage in conversations that included members of the governor's staff, adding Chris Cuomo will not participate in such conversations going forward.
That's Brian Shook reporting. Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren calling the timing of her husband's arrest earlier this week on drug and weapons charges highly suspicious.
Some people would do anything to try and break me. If this is not about politics, why is Tim's next court date June 21st, the day before primary day? Now that's quite the coincidence.
Well, that court date was actually set by the lawyer representing Lovely Warren's husband. The mayor is seeking a third term and is on the ballot this primary day in New York. Lovely Warren claims there's a concerted effort out there to get her out of office.
Why? At the exact time that the police were knocking at my door, the New York Times, all the way from Manhattan, was sending me an email asking me about this.
During a press conference Thursday, the local district attorney denied any political motivations. Prosecutors say the mayor's husband was part of a drug ring that's been operating for many months in Rochester. Pennsylvania's fired the company that exposed the private information of tens of thousands of residents. It happened while that company was conducting COVID contact tracing. Family Life's Terry Diener.
Employees of Insight Global used unauthorized Google accounts to store names, phone numbers, email addresses, and other information about residents who had been reached for contact tracing. The state had planned to drop Insight Global once its contract expired at the end of July, but the health department said Thursday it will terminate the contract early on June the 19th. The department said the state's contact tracing operation would continue with a new vendor. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. PBS defending a new children's television program designed for 3 to 8 year olds that features a singing and dancing drag queen.
Stop going after people's children. Stop trying to move an agenda that is both political and sexual to America's children.
That is radio talk show host Tammy Bruce. For the first time since 2019, Western New York's largest amusement park back in business. Things going to be a little different today, though, at Darien Lake. For starters, you can only get in if you've made an online reservation.
And you'll pick the day that you want to come, and you'll pick the time that you want to come, and then all you do is show up for the day with your reservation, and you get into the park, and you have a great day.
Park spokeswoman Jody Brege.
We are very excited to invite guests back to our park. As everyone knows, we were unable to open last year, and to have the fun back here in Western New York.
Starting tomorrow, Darien Lake will be lifting the mask mandate for the fully vaccinated. NHL playoff action to get your weekend started. Sunny time. Your 2 minute drill.
Yeah, let's start on the ice. Brandon Tanev scored the go-ahead goal. 3:36 remaining. The Penguins beat the Islanders 5-4 on Long Island. Team wins, says Chris Letang.
I think tonight was nice to see that every line contributed.
The Pens have a 2-1 series lead. The Panthers beat the Lightning in overtime 6-5 in Tampa. Meanwhile, in Toronto.
Tavares, he got knocked down there on a hit, and John Tavares is down and not getting up.
Maple Leafs captain John Tavares transported to the hospital after that scary hit. Maple Leafs fall to the Canadiens 2-1. Golden Knights beat the Wild 5-2 in Minnesota. The Washington Wizards advancing to the first round of the Eastern Conference playoff after crushing the Pacers 142-115 in the 8th seed play-in game in Washington. They'll take on top-seeded Philadelphia 76ers round 1 beginning Sunday. Tonight, the Golden State Warriors hosting the Memphis Grizzlies. The winner will take on the Utah Jazz. The NBA is releasing a list of finalists for the MVP and other year-end awards. Nikola Jokic will compete against Joel Embiid and Stephen Curry for the MVP honors. Rudy Gobert, Draymond Green, and Ben Simmons for Defensive Player of the Year. LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, and Tyrese Halliburton will vie for the Rookie of the Year. To baseball, and Domingo Germán threw 7 innings of shutout ball. The Yankees beat the Rangers 2-0 in Arlington. That impressed Aaron Boone.
But Domingo, continues to pitch really well. I mean, his mix of pitches, the command of those, the ability to throw any and any count.
From Boone to the moon.
One, Pujols hits the ball the other way, deep to right field. Reddick's going back at the wall. Albert Pujols, his first Dodger home run.
How Albert Pujols' first home run as a Dodger as L.A. beat Arizona 3-2. Buccos knocked off the Braves in 10 innings 6-4. Phillies blanked by the Marlins 6-0. Blue Jays fall to Boston 8-7. And Corey Connors jumped out to the first round lead of the PGA Championship, but started today with 5 bogeys and 2 birdies. Second round action is underway. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiette.
Getting it done. Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, the boys are back. Capital Connection queued up on the way, plus 1-4-3 day in Pennsylvania.
Is religious freedom truly the first freedom, or is it just one among many? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In a recent article at Christianity Today, Judd Birdsall of the Berkeley Center for Religion, Peace, and World Affairs at Georgetown University analyzed the differences between how the Biden administration has handled religious liberty concerns so far and how his predecessor did. In the process, the article provides a critical lesson in how religious freedom is so often misunderstood, both in terms of the relationship between church and state and in terms of conscience rights across the board. First, there's the matter of the whole seriousness of the issue. Birdsall, in arguing that the State Department under President Trump had exaggerated claims of global religious oppression, describes the different ways that the data can be measured and reported. It seemed like a strange statement to make. Birdsall also took issue with the tone and tenor difference between Trump officials and Biden officials, claiming that the previous administration was too boastful about their commitment to religious liberty. Instead, wrote Birdsall, America should be known for, quote, not only a higher level of respect for religious freedom, but also more honesty about shortcomings and actively addressing them. Now, there's nothing with that statement that I disagree with, but I'd have to point out that the answer is not more humility without action internationally or more humility without acknowledging the shortcomings at home when it comes to religious freedom restrictions. See, in the wake of the nationalism, the totalitarianism, and religious-based oppression of the last several decades, the fact that the government of the United States finally put the first freedom at the forefront of its international relationships, that is something to acknowledge. In contrast, the Biden administration, at least so far, has followed the Obama administration's tack, particularly the tack of his second term when he placed LGBTQ concerns and abortion access concerns front and center in its international dealings. At the end of the day, these distinctions that Birdsall makes, and he rightly notes this, can be traced to two competing views of religious liberty. The first he calls the First Freedom view. It's based on the placing of religious freedom within the Bill of Rights. The other he calls the Article 18 view. It's based on the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights definition and description of religious freedom. You see, in the former view, religious freedom is the first freedom, and it grounds many other freedoms essential for human and social flourishing. In the latter, spiritual things are protected as a matter of personal choice, alongside all the other personal choices that people have rights to, and it might be necessary that it is deferent to those other human rights. Birdsall rightly recognizes that at least so far, the Biden administration seems to hold to an Article 18 view of freedom, seeing religious liberty as something to be worked out in light of other freedoms, especially sexual freedom. An opponent of that view, interestingly enough, could be found in the very first issue of Christianity Today in an article written by its founding editor. In the article, Carl F. H. Henry pondered the fragile basis for freedom in the West, arguing that champions of liberty far too often argued for it on a secular individualistic basis. For Henry, this would prove woefully insufficient because the only hope for maintaining liberty, he thought, was to reorient ourselves to the proper foundations of freedom. Instead of a mere side effect of other freedoms, religious liberty is only properly understood as the first freedom. It can guarantee the other proper rights of citizens, religious or not, because it's based upon a particular vision of the kind of creature citizens are. In particular, that they do not belong, in mind and body, to the state or to an especially powerful interest group. But in their consciences, they belong primarily to God. Any other basis of freedom subjects all other freedoms to death by 1,000 qualifications. Without robust protections for religious freedom, all of our other rights will have no higher court of appeal than whomever currently holds the keys to power. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 minutes past the hour, the weekend is here.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The heat is on, partly to mostly sunny, with high temperatures ranging from the mid-80s to the mid-90s. Will be near record territory. It will cool, though, some near the shores of Lake Erie in Ontario. Partly cloudy, mild tonight, the low in the 60s. Tomorrow, variable clouds and sun with an afternoon shower, thunder shower. High temperatures in the lower to mid-80s. Sunday, mostly cloudy. Couple of showers and rumbles around with high temperatures in the mid-70s to the middle 80s. Clears out, cools off briefly on Monday.
All right, Kevin Williams, you're plugged into the Noon Report, a Friday edition on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues. At the state capitals, they are, as always, Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Jason, to mask or not to mask, that is the question these days in New York. Of course, the mask came off for the vaccinated this week, but the state says local businesses can set their own mask rules, and that's causing a little confusion out there. I want to ask you, do you think that local businesses should have the right to ask you for proof of vaccination?
Well, you know, I think the proof of vaccination is a different question than perhaps mask wearing or not. I don't think that a business should be there getting into my personal health decisions and policies regarding that. If a store wants to require masks of all of its, you know, customers, that's certainly up to the store. The market will drive that, though. And most large businesses across the nation, the national retail chains, are moving away from a mask policy. That tells you where the customer base is.
Yeah, quick follow-up to that. The state, on the same day, the mask came off, so to speak. The state clamped down on daycares and summer camps. Kids as young as two have to mask up outdoors. What's that all about?
Well, that flies in the face of the CDC guidance, and I just don't understand the state's policy regarding that. It's going to require that campers over the age of two that are not fully vaccinated must wear face coverings except when eating, drinking, showering, swimming, sleeping, or resting. But if you're outside fishing at the pond, you got to wear a mask, but if you're in the cabin sleeping, you don't. It just doesn't make sense, like so much of what has been occurring here in the state regarding COVID policy. It's just not consistent.
Yeah, let's talk about the big primary elections earlier this week. Mike, I know you're pleased to see those two statewide referendums that rein in Governor Wolf's pandemic powers. Both of them passed. Were you surprised at the results, and what does it mean going forward?
Well, I was pleasantly surprised at the results. We didn't know how it was going to go. We knew it was going to be close because there were a lot of forces that were advocating for shooting down the referendums, these constitutional amendments, including the language that the governor's, the administration put together that was very confusing. But ultimately, I think the people of Pennsylvania, the voters of Pennsylvania, at least 54% of them, saw it for what it was and said it was time to not only restrain this governor's power related to COVID, but future governor's powers, that they can't continually renew these emergency declarations and keep sole power to themselves over an extended period.
Yeah, I like what you said. Independence Day is May 18th now in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, great stuff. You know, Jason, New York's attorney general made big news this week. She's investigating former President Trump, which means she's maybe not investigating current Governor Cuomo. Many are wondering if this Cuomo probe is more of a dog and pony show and how serious Democrats are when it comes to this impeachment inquiry. Your thoughts on that?
Well, here's to hoping the Attorney General can walk and chew gum at the same time, because we really do need to have some attention on that Cuomo investigation. It has been, seems like, stalling in the Assembly Judiciary Committee, and I am anxiously awaiting seeing what the Attorney General is going to do as well. I'm hoping that report will be out in early June, but I just have no confidence at this point that it's moving very quickly at all.
Yeah, a lot of folks, Rob Astorino even hinted at this earlier this week, that she is using this as leverage as she may be about to embark on a Democratic run herself. What are your thoughts?
Well, that may be why the report will come out sooner than later. If she can pop the report now, it helps clear the path and the perception. If she does essentially leave the AG's office, that stands for aspiring governor in this instance, yeah, and decides to run for governor herself.
Hey, the governor of Pennsylvania, Michael, made big news this week as well by his Juneteenth proclamation, where he pretty much threw police officers under the bus, accusing many of them of being racist. Should he apologize to the state police?
Well, I think he should, and the state police union is calling for it, the FOP and the state police organization. You know, Governor Wolf is, a lot of people don't know it because he seems so mild-mannered, but he was named by Huffington Post as the most liberal governor in America, and he's just following suit with these kinds of statements and proclamations and things with the progressive end of the Democrat Party that he is part of, and he should apologize to the police because they are the front line in protecting citizens here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and the kind of things that he said about them are not called for.
Yeah. Lee Zeldin picking up a big endorsement from former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. You know, it seems like the GOP is getting behind him more and more. There's also Westchester County, former Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, who ran once before for Governor Jason. And then there's this guy, a Giuliani, but not the one you're thinking of. This is the son of the former mayor, 35-year-old Andrew Giuliani, officially a candidate for governor. Can he make some noise, or is his 15 minutes of fame about to be over?
Well, that all depends on how much money he can raise and how far the consultants will push him. I suspect with the Giuliani name, he may last a little longer than some would like, to be perfectly honest. We live in New York State, and it's going to be challenging to put up the name Giuliani on the ticket that is closely tied to Donald Trump and have any success in a gubernatorial run. It's just tough right now to run under that name, and I think that Andrew Giuliani is going to find that difficulty as he runs into the buzzsaw of electoral politics here in the Empire State.
Yeah, Doug Mastriano, he's a name you like in Pennsylvania. He has been floating now as a candidate for governor. In fact, he admits that Donald Trump told him months ago he should run. Four-term Congressman Lou Barletta is running for governor. He might be the front runner at this point. What do you think, Michael?
Well, he has some name recognition because of a run for the United States Senate in the past, and being a United States congressman from the sort of eastern central part of Pennsylvania. He made a name for himself as the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, quite a number of years ago when he took a stand against illegal immigration and encouraging people to speak English with a lot of immigrants in his city of Hazleton.
Yeah.
Whether or not he's going to be a formidable candidate remains to be seen. We're still a little bit early, and there are other names that are likely to be popping into the race, and who the party gets behind, who has the money, or all of the factors that are going to be making a difference in what happens in that race.
All right, let's talk policy, moving away from politics, Jason. And the state legislative session is quickly winding down. June 10th, the last day they're scheduled to be in Albany. Whether it's efforts to curtail privacy rights when it comes to vaccines, the undermining pregnancy resource centers, or exposing kids to indoctrination when it comes to sexuality, there is a lot to keep an eye on. Of all that the lawmakers are pushing at this late hour, what most keeps you up at night, Jason McGuire?
Well, of all the issues that are moving, I mean, you know, I think most people don't understand that as you come to the final days of session, there's probably literally dozens of bills we have to speculate as to what may move, because a bill will be announced it's moving, and maybe 2-3 minutes later it moves through a committee and it's heading to the floor. So it's tough to speculate as to what will move. But we're watching very closely this bill that would require mandate vaccine reporting. That's a privacy issue. It's a civil liberty concern. In so-called Senate 75 or Assembly 279 is one we're watching in the final days of this legislative session.
All right. And backed by popular demand, of course, the pandemic canceled so much of our lives last year, Michael, including this, but it's back. Your City on a Hill Youth Leadership Conference. We love bragging on this because it really focuses on the next generation of leaders in our country. You are taking applications for it. What is it? How can our listeners get involved?
Yes, City on the Hill is a week-long youth leadership and worldview camp for high school teens, and we've been doing it since 2001 with 1 year where we didn't do it, which was last year because of the COVID pandemic. But we're back. It's hosted at Lancaster Bible College with 2 days at the Pennsylvania State Capitol, and it is all about helping these young people who come discover the God-given leadership skills that they have. It's full of fun and adventure. We really see it as a life-changing experience for these young people, and that's what they report back to us. So we're excited that it's back on for 2021.
All right, and that'll happen later this summer. And if you want more information about that, Michael, that's all on your website. Where can they find it?
PAFamily.org.
And stay involved as the New York State legislative session winds down. A lot of issues out there. Jason, where can folks find out more?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
great job as always. It's called Capital Connection. Comes your way Fridays during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Temperatures are heading toward record territory in parts of our region again today, with a summer-like pattern that'll carry us into the weekend, but be interrupted by a front that'll kick up a couple of scattered showers and thunder showers and then cool the air by early next week. Cool it briefly. In the meantime, for this afternoon, the heat is on. Partly to mostly sunny, with high temperatures ranging from the mid-80s to the mid-90s, will be near record territory. It will cool, though, some near the shores of Lake Erie in Ontario. Partly cloudy, mild tonight, the low in the 60s. Tomorrow, variable clouds and sun with an afternoon shower, thunder shower. High temperatures in the lower to mid-80s. Sunday, mostly cloudy, couple of showers and rumbles around with high temperatures in the mid-70s to the middle 80s. Clears out, cools off briefly on Monday.
All righty, Kevin Williams, have yourself a fantastic weekend. Finally, this Friday, tomorrow is 143 day in PA. On the 143rd day of the year, the Commonwealth is encouraging folks to show kindness toward each other. 143 is an expression that Pittsburgh natives used to say, I love you, a reference to the number of letters in each word. Tina Waters at the Fred Rogers Center in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, says there's still a lot this generation could learn from Mr. Rogers.
I think he would tell all of us, next time you go to type something on social media, type something kind. How much better is it for someone to read a comment that makes their day than brings them down?
Good stuff. Fred Rogers passed away of cancer back in 2003. A kindness generator can be found at pa.gov/143day. It tallies all the good deeds done in the Commonwealth. That is the world we live in this Friday. Thanks for coming along. Have yourself a great weekend, won't you? I'm Bill Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.